Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters Radio.
Good morning. I'm Michelle Matthews, your host, and we're here for another edition of Growth Matters. And so today we have two distinguished gentlemen from the Atlanta community. We have James Franklin, and he's the CEO of TechBridge. And many of you may know that TechBridge is a nonprofit that really helps to drive community impact by making sure that other nonprofits are able to use technology and have technology to really support what they're doing. So we're really excited to have you here this morning, James.
Very happy to be here. Thank you, Michelle.
And then we also have Anthony Joseph, who is the CEO of Concessions International, and they're an Atlanta-based company, and they're in the food and beverage industry, and they're an operator that is family-owned and minority business, and they have operations across the U.S. Many of you who are here in Atlanta may know them because they operate Pascal's Restaurant in the historic Castleberry District, and they've got a lot of new and exciting things that are going on related to World of Coca-Cola and things in the Georgia Aquarium. So good to see you this morning, Anthony.
Thank you. It's glad to be here, and it's president, not CEO.
I'm sorry. So, president of Concessions International. So, why don't we just kind of start out by allowing each of you to sort of, as I think about it, give the nickel tour of your organization and tell us a little bit more so that our listeners can understand. James.
Great. So, TechBridge, you know, you did a phenomenal introduction, so thank you for that. But TechBridge, our mission is to deliver affordable business and technology expertise to the nonprofits in our community. And the reason we do that is because it's through the nonprofits that we serve that we enrich our community and make it a better place. And, you know, the sad state in the nonprofit world is the needs are immense. As a matter of fact, they're unlimited. And so with the needs being so great and with the donor dollars being focused on satisfying those needs, whether it's feeding children, whether it's getting an education, whether it's providing beds to those that need them, there's little money left over for things like technology. There's little money left over for a nonprofit to invest in themselves in any way. And so we really fill that gap, and we do it in such a way that we understand the realities of the nonprofit world, and we understand that what might be right for a Coca-Cola is probably not appropriate for a small nonprofit. But there is some correlation there. And so we take the best and most appropriate and the affordable aspects of what corporate America does and distill it down into something that's appropriate for a homeless shelter, let's say. And it's been great. It's a phenomenal mission. I love participating in it, and I love seeing the impact that we have with our community nonprofits as they help make our community better.
Great. And so, Anthony, tell us a little bit about Concessions International.
All right. Well, Concessions International is an airport food and beverage concessionaire headquartered here in Atlanta. We operate in 8 airports around the country. We're in Miami, Denver, Dallas, Fort Worth, also Atlanta. And essentially, we operate franchises. So it's franchises and licenses of non-franchise companies. We're owned by Herman Russell and the Russell family, better known locally for H.J. Russell & Company in the construction business.
Great. So also for our listeners, just so that they have a sense of both of you and sort of personally your career, Anthony, tell me a little bit about how you came to Concessions and, you know, sort of give us that quick snapshot of your bio.
Okay. Well, I came to Atlanta in 97, and I was a lawyer working at, it's now McKenna Long Aldridge, on the mergers and acquisitions team. And actually, there's a nonprofit connection there because I was doing some pro bono work with an organization in the community. It's now Forever Family. It was Aid to Children of Imprisoned Mothers. And through that organization, the president of the board was Danita Russell Major, who's today the CEO and one of the owners of Concessions International. So I got to know and work with her. And the company went through a change in ownership where Mr. Russell previously had 2 partners. And when he bought them out, it became a fully owned family business. They had some changes in the leadership, and then there was an opportunity for me to join the company as general counsel. So I joined I was general counsel for about 5 years before transitioning to my current role of president.
Great. James, give us the nickel tour of your career.
I'm going to do my best to make sure it's not a quarter tour. So My background was all about professional services. I started off in the early days, with Pricewaterhouse and Oracle Corporation and such. My journey to TechBridge actually started when I was at HP. I was in their federal government practice, and I was getting my MBA up there. And I had an executive coach. And the executive coach said, the only way that you're going to find happiness in your career is to find a way to merge your professional goals and your civic goals. And he said, and the second thing is the community that you identify with is Atlanta, Georgia, not D.C. So you need to move back to Atlanta and start your new growth. And so I did. And the week I came back, a gentleman named Wayne Kellum, who was actually chairman of the board at the time, called me up and said, I'm really glad that you're back. I need you to volunteer for TechBridge. And so ended up doing that, ended up being, after a few years, maybe many years, chairman of the board. And then 2 years ago, I left my day job to become CEO of TechBridge.
Yeah, I want to piggyback on that, because this idea of getting in touch with what's really important to you and then blending that with your professional career, we hear a lot about that. But I think it's something that sometimes people really have, they're either skeptical or they have trouble sort of making a shift when that sort of path that you've got to make another decision presents themselves. How was that for you to make that transition and really do that soul searching to say, yep, I'm going to do something different?
For me, it was surprisingly easy. And I'll probably because I think I tend to put blinders on at those moments and get very focused. And also, I think just things happen, maybe. Things happen for a reason. So take, for example, me moving back to Atlanta. I had a wonderful boss at HP at the time, and I told him, hey, I got great news. I'm going to move back to Atlanta. And he said, well, how's that going to work? You run half my federal government practice. And I was like, I don't know, but it'll be great. It'll be fantastic, and don't worry about it. And he calls me up a few weeks later, and he said, I got some great news. And I said, what's that? And he goes, you're not fired after all. You can run state and local government for the U.S. and live anywhere you want.
Oh, great.
So, you know, maybe I should have thought about it. Maybe I should have had a lot of angst, but it just felt right. And I didn't think about it a whole lot, and it worked out, you know, luckily. And then the same thing happened stepping in to the CEO role. There was a need, and I started the search committee, and I sat down with the outgoing CEO, and I said, what do you think would make a good CEO for the organization? And she goes, I think you should do it. I was like, I'll think about that. And at first I was like, no, I can't do that. I mean, I do something else. And the more I thought about it, the more it felt right. And I sat down with a gentleman named Sig Mosley, who I'm really fond of. And Sig, if you're listening, I hope you're okay with me talking about you. But took him out to lunch, and I worked for a company he invested in. And I said, Sig, you know, I'm kind of thinking about going over to TechBridge, but I know my job is to make you money, and I don't want to mess that up and get sideways with you. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, TechBridge is a part of my portfolio, just like any one of my companies. And the fact that they're a nonprofit doesn't make any difference to me. And people move in between my companies all the time. So I've been blessed that I've had wonderful people in my life. And I've been blessed to have great opportunities. So finding the path to be able to make a difference has, I guess, been easy.
Right. So before I get into a little bit about each of your organizations and the things that you're doing, I also want to piggyback on something that you said, Anthony, that you were chief legal counsel and then you moved into a role as president. And although you've been president for a while, can you kind of take yourself back and sort of how was that transition? Because I know a lot of our listeners, as they think about how they might run an organization or how they might shift in their career, you know that can be a transition. So, what did you do to help make that a smooth one? Can you remember back?
I can remember back. It does not seem that long ago. Well, it was not planned, so that may not be that helpful as far as how do you lay out a path. I think that maybe similar to James, I have the good fortune of working for a family of entrepreneurs, and our founder, you know, he created the business from scratch at age 16 is when he started. in business, learned a trade and built an organization. This is on the construction side that's lasted over 60 years, and now the concessions business is about 35 years. And so he had no path, you know, there was no sort of organizational structure and vision. It was very much about opportunity and what you can get done. And so being in the organization after about a year or two, when I started to get my, I think I was starting to get my arms around the legal side, I became very involved in many of the business aspects of the company. And so the transition really occurred when we needed a leadership transition, and I was positioned to, you know, to move into that role and hopefully provide what we needed. So it was an opportunity where it was really his faith and vision that I could take on that role. And I look back on it now and think, you know, I barely knew what I was doing for quite some time, and now I feel like I'm starting to get my arms around that role. So it's really being in an organization where you're not pigeonholed, and I think sometimes at larger corporations that can be challenging. I know for lawyers, there are many lawyers out there who would like to make the transition, and it's difficult if you go to a major corporation where you go from a law firm to basically you're at a law firm that's within an organization. It's very hard to have that sort of exposure and work on different things. So it does take a leap of whether it's going out on your own or going to a smaller business where you can do different things. But so that transition for me was internal, where when I made the switch, I was already engaged with certainly our strategic, our partnership, our major issues. What I didn't have was, you know, the operational experience. But then, you know, when you're an executive team, it's really about the team and leadership and management versus one specific discipline. So I had that space provided and trust from our owners to put me in a position that I hadn't envisioned for myself.
Yeah, and so one of the takeaways I take from both of your stories is that while you prepare yourself and you know, you're in your career and you do all those things, it's also a bit of serendipity in that you know people that you are open to the possibilities that maybe are presenting themselves, and that you have sort of the confidence within yourself that you can, you know, make a shift and that you can do different things. So thanks for sharing a little bit about both of yours before we go to your company. So, Anthony, let me come back to you. When you think about Concessions International and you think about where you're trying to take the organization, tell our listeners a little bit about what growth means to you and what maybe use as an example a current project that you're working on that's positioning you for moving forward.
Okay. Well, you know, the basic structure of our business is, like I said, it's mostly franchise models, although in airports you see more and more concepts like we've had Pascal's in the Atlanta airport for some time. It's not a franchise. It's a local business that resonates. And airports are moving in the direction of trying to create a sense of place. They're a gateway to the region. They want you to recognize, you know, how do you know you're in Atlanta and not Dallas or New York? So it's not a generic experience. So our expertise is both on the contracting side of how do you win. There are always competitive bids. How do you win a contract? How do you build in an airport environment, and how do you operate and provide excellent customer service to the guest? So we've been doing that for over three decades. Where we're at a shift is that we're dealing with the pressures that the restaurant industry is dealing with in general. So it's been very challenging for the restaurant industry overall over the last certainly 5 years, if not decade, as far as commodity prices, a lot of the regulatory issues, healthcare. You know, there are a lot of challenges facing restaurateurs and small business. And then on top of that, what we've seen in our industry is the effect of globalization, where when I joined the company, we competed against American companies, local companies. Today, much of our competition are global public corporations, many headquartered in Europe, that not recently, but 4 or 5 years ago, came into the U.S. market. So we're seeing that sort of competition. So what it's meant for us is we are in hospitality. Ultimately, it's about service and it's about your people. And so where you can focus on quality and the relationships with your landlords and your brand partners and provide an excellent service, size doesn't impact those things. Size can impact your buy-in power. It can impact your lobbying power and so forth, but it cannot affect the service in your actual restaurants that's delivered by your associates and your staff. So a lot of our focus has been on how do we improve improve those relationships, improve that quality, improve the technology that's needed to allow us to provide the best service, and you know, and continue to compete that way. And it's worked for us.
Yeah. So, James, anytime we talk about technology, there's just it's a little overwhelming, I would imagine. So tell us a little bit about the TechBridge model and how you're growing in the space you're in.
Absolutely. I guess I'll start with a couple things. One is, you're right, technology is overwhelming for all of us, and it's particularly overwhelming for a nonprofit, because the typical nonprofit doesn't spend a lot of time thinking about technology. They spend all of their time thinking about the people they serve. So the way we make technology obtainable and approachable for the nonprofit is we make a lot of the decisions for them. Take, for example, you know, Anthony's industry. There's a lot of complexity there, whether you're talking about payroll, whether you're talking about managing your people, whether you're talking about logistics of getting food and inventory. I mean, there's just a lot going on. And so what we'll do is maybe – sit with an organization like yourself and learn about what is great about your business and how you automate that. And then we take those pieces out and say, well, like the nonprofit I met with just yesterday, MedShare, they're distributing goods around the world, right? And so if I can learn from, you know, a company, let's say a UPS or whatever, and if I can learn about logistics from them and inventory management from them, there might be these kernels of gold that I can put into an organization like a MedShare, for example. And then as far as growth, I'm glad that you mentioned growth, obviously, with the title of the show. Growth is one of our core values. And I mentioned about how I came to Atlanta because that was the community I identify with, and I wanted to make an impact in the community. And what I quickly realized is the power of technology in the nonprofit sector, but really with any sector, it's about scale. Technology is really expensive. And so in order to have a big impact and in order to solve big problems, you have to have scale. So we're expanding our community to be a national community at the moment. So we have a fundraiser that's coming up in 2 weeks in Silicon Valley, which is actually the roots of the Digital Ball, which, Michelle, I'm sure you're familiar with. So it's exciting to go back to our roots, if you will. But we have to do more. We have become very good at solving small problems. And the way I talk about small problems is they're big in our hearts, but they're small in impact because it's a problem that an individual nonprofit has. But if we're going to solve big problems like alleviating homelessness and improving the lives of a large number of people that suffer from homelessness, then you can't have enough of an impact with one nonprofit. You have to have a lot of nonprofits, and you have to have big, complex solutions, which means you need a lot of support, which means you need a lot of scale, and you need to be able to get the unit price down to something that a nonprofit can afford.
Yeah, interesting. Meredith from MedShare was on our show. She was actually on our inaugural show, so I'm familiar with them. I would imagine, Anthony, and you correct me if I'm wrong, as I'm listening to James, some of his issues related to technology, you know, may be similar to things that you're grappling with. You're really focused on customer service and dealing with that client. But technology, I would imagine, plays a role in how well you're able to run your restaurants and be an operator. So how does technology sort of play into what your growth strategy is?
Well, I think, you know, every organization today has to be a technology organization. And the shift for us is that over the past several years, most of our focus on technology has been internal. It's been about how do you have more efficient accounting systems, back office systems, you know your purchasing systems, everything from getting rid of paper. You know, our performance management systems are now cloud based. You know, I can use my iPhone right now and look at any of our 40 locations, and I can get down to the level of each cashier, their shift, what their sales are right now. And you can use that data to do better, you know, better analysis, understand your costs better. So it's been a lot of that internal side. The shift that we're dealing with today is the customer service part, right? I mean, we all are familiar with the traditional customer service experience, whether it's quick service, fast casual, or casual dining table service. And today the question is, well, how is that technology interface going to affect our industry? You know, there was a time when ATMs were, you know, considered sort of a major departure from your typical banking experience. And so how does that, what does that mean? You know, is quick service going to, will people order from kiosks? Do they want to order from kiosks? We're currently developing two concepts in the Atlanta airport that would open at the end of the year that will be all iPad environments in terms of the menus, you know, the staff when they're, and that's something new in terms of you've got a generation of guests that are looking for that, and then, but you don't want to create a barrier with it. So I think that's the next phase for us, is that we have digital menu boards. We have what we call merchandisers in the units that are digital. We have fountain displays, the digital signage. And so that's already sort of come into our space. But it's that next phase of that interaction piece. And is it going to be hardware-based? Is it more software-based? You know, because everyone's got their own devices, it won't be long before you'll have, you know, using cell phones to make your payments, replacing credit cards in airports. So that world is coming. And one of the great things about being in an airport space is that, you know, we have very sophisticated high-end travelers. The business traveler is the base core of our business, and they are at the cutting edge when it comes to technology and what they demand. And so there's going to be a major transformation over the next few years as the technology comes from sort of the back of the house with the functions that we're already doing into the front of the house.
Yeah, so you mentioned that word that everybody in technology is talking about, is the cloud. And so, James, tell us, one, for our listeners that maybe not really understand what that is, so if you could just sort of maybe lay that out and why that's taking hold. And then, two, how is that enabling nonprofits to maybe do some things differently that helps with their technology experience?
So the cloud is... you know, it's interesting. I started in technology 20 years ago, and I'll never forget the first day on the job or thereabouts, the CEO stands up and says something about, a dumb terminal. And I'm like, they really called it that? They could have called it anything they wanted, and they picked dumb terminal as the name for this thing. And but back then, you had a mainframe. You had a really big computer, and you had all these little tiny you know, workstations that connected to it, and there wasn't a whole lot of work that was done on this quote-unquote dumb terminal. And then technology changed, and you know, the PC industry was born, and Microsoft said, you know, we can have these really amazing PCs, and we don't need to deal with the network. We don't need to spend the time and energy we don't need to spend the time and energy of connecting this local PC with this computer that's somewhere else. You can do everything locally, and it'll be better, and it'll be faster, and it'll be great. And so the client-server world did really well for a while. Well, now with the invention of the internet, thanks to Al Gore, we now have now it's easy to connect to a computer somewhere else. So the idea of this mainframe's back, right? It's so why would I want to do all this stuff locally? Because if I do it locally, something could happen to my PC. It could break. If my PC's at my house and I go to my go to the restaurant, well, I can't access that PC. Why would I want to do that? With the network being so pervasive and so good, I rely on the network to make sure I get the information I need. And then I store all my information in a central location. So that's the cloud. So the difference between a cloud and, you know, that mainframe is the cloud is accessible over the public internet. And so I can have a data center anywhere in the world, and I can tap into this global internet, this cloud, and like magic, whatever I want pops up. And it's really amazing, and it's changing the way we do business. It's changing the way we buy food. It's changing every aspect of our life. So it's an exciting time to be here. How that makes an impact on the nonprofit world is phenomenal. Because of the generosity of corporate America, whether it's Microsoft with their Office 365 platform or Google with Google Apps or Salesforce with their CRM system, these companies make it available for free to the nonprofit sector. And if you look at the typical nonprofit sector, they have servers and equipment that's 10 years old, let's say, and it's actually pretty easy for them to migrate to this new cloud platform because they don't have these expensive assets that it's hard for them to move away. So I can walk in and say, just stop using all this stuff in here. Here's this new thing called the cloud and these capabilities that, you know, a Home Depot uses or a Delta airline uses, and you can use them right out of the box. So it's been a fantastic transformation for the nonprofit sector, and that's a big chunk of what we do is migrate nonprofits to the cloud.
So as you are talking about some of the things that are related to technology, and I think you also alluded to it, Anthony, there's a whole aspect of the technology can be there, but if people are not sort of willing to use it and take advantage of it, it's a challenge. So you have done technology implementations in for-profit, large organizations, and you're dealing in the nonprofit. Do you see differences? And what would you tell our listening audience that might be a nonprofit to how they can usher in sort of this technology and all that it can bring for people that maybe have not had as much experience with cutting-edge kinds of things?
I think the way I'll answer that is I'll talk about our mistakes. We at our core, people in the technology world are engineers. So they like building things and, like your business travelers, they love their toys. So I'm in that group. I'm not going to stand in line for the new iPhone, for 12 hours or whatever, but I kind of wish I could, right? So we like technology and we like putting it in place. And we sometimes forget that technology is just a tool, right? If that new iPhone doesn't give me the means to do my job better, then it's just a toy. It's something to play with, right? If it's going to be a true tool that delivers results, I need to understand what that is, and I need to map that back to the way I do my work and understand how it's going to make my work easier. And so that's a long intro into sometimes we implement systems for nonprofits or in corporate America, and we think that the technology itself is the end game. And we lose sight of the fact that it's about better customer service. We lose sight of the fact that it's about better purchasing power through whatever means, faster delivery. And so we've had to make an investment in TechBridge because I think at times we would build this shiny object called technology and we'd give it to a nonprofit and we'd say, this is amazing, we'll see you later. And what ends up happening is they don't use it. They don't use it because they don't understand it. They don't think it helps them. And they revert back to the way they used to do their job because that's what's comfortable for them. And that whole discipline is called change management. And so we've invested in change management, and we make sure that we start with what is your process? How do you get your work done? And what would be a better way of getting that work done? And then we automate it. Once we know what the new process is, we automate it using technology, and then we stick around and follow up with them to make sure they know how to use it, make sure they embrace it. And if it's not meeting our objectives, whatever they may be, then we course correct.
Yeah. So, Anthony, you talked about how you are a small, medium-sized business, and that has some things that are different than if I worked in corporate America. And I think you also have the sort of the added dynamic of your minority-owned business. So talk to us a little bit about are there things that you have to do differently or manage differently as a result of sort of the environment that you're in? And then also what are some maybe advantages that just don't always come to mind to those of us that aren't in a minority-owned environment?
I don't know that I think we have the same challenges of a medium-sized business when you look at what's the impact of being a minority business. There are some particular aspects of being a minority-owned business that because we do government contracting come into play. We do not participate in any programs based on the status of being a minority company because in the airports it's under federal regulations, and based on the size of our company, there are categories, but we don't qualify for that. But we are required to have minority partners, so that can be confusing sometimes, is that because of our size in airports, we have to, there are requirements to have minority and women-owned businesses. So I think that, I don't know that there's aspects that I would say relate directly to either being a minority company or medium-sized company more as what drives us is the particular values of the family and the owners and the culture they've established. And so there are definitely values about around opportunity and inclusiveness that are ingrained in who we are, that I think do drive our decision making and you know, and how we approach business and how we're seen. But I would think that really for me is about the culture the company has had established from the start and that we maintain through on how we do business. I think that because when we're, you know, when we're competing, it's not when you're in our, if you're in Pascal's or if you're in a Wendy's or a Panda Express that you operate, you know, it's the same quality standards that everyone's looking for. So that's not something that from our consumer guest standpoint is a factor of who we are. It's much more of our internal of how we manage, how we the opportunities for our management team for growth, for creating a career, and for connecting with some of our landlord clients is where it would matter.
Yeah. So if I turn a little bit to operating a business in today's environment, as I was thinking about Concessions International and the sort of environmental factors that are influencing you, and I was thinking, what, you know, the things that are really top of mind in terms of economic and social issues, immigration, the Affordable Health Care Act. If you think about the local food movement, so that obesity, you know, I could go on, and I and also we've seen recently in the news about, you know, living wage. So, you know, your space is impacted really by all of those things. You know, sort of how are you managing through, you've got to deal with all that and still generate a profit, but also have that, if I would say, spirit of humanity and that you're dealing with individuals. How are you balancing that?
Well, it's part of everything. It's actually, it's not that it's easy, but I think for me and for our organization, those values are a given. And so, which is why I have been there, you know, almost 15 years, as long as I've been with the organization and as long as the company has been around. There are, for all those cases, there are advantages to being a private-owned business and a family business where you can take a longer view. And there are times where we make decisions that are about, you know, the sense of fairness, integrity, compassion of how we want to operate that doesn't necessarily pay off tomorrow, but does pay off in the long run if you believe that, you know, the very basis for our company having opportunities and having growth is because of who we are and how we operate. So I found that all those issues are challenging. They're difficult case by case, and there are some where, you know, some of the policies that we have to live under are, you know, make it increasingly difficult to make things work. But our approach is that we do try to, we always maintain that balance. And we take the long view, and yes, we focus on profitability. If it wasn't for profitability and continuing to seek opportunities, we wouldn't be able to be who we are and, you know, have the kind of impact on the community that we do. So it is difficult, but I think we're a unique organization in our space compared with our competitors. And by focusing on who we are, we're able to offer an alternative to the marketplace.
Yeah, and I see a connection as I think about TechBridge because I know a little bit about the organization. And so, as you said, you're very focused on helping these nonprofits deal with their social mission. But what I also know about the organization is you definitely run it as a business and you have very specific metrics. So talk to us a little bit about the things that are within your culture of your organization that are helping you to have that, you know, sort of compassion and the spirit that goes with the social mission, but bringing in that we still have to make sure that we are meeting objectives and hitting our marks.
So first off, most of the people in our organization, not all by any means, but many of the people in the organization have a professional services background. So they're from the consulting world. There's a, you know, a lot of Accenture and that kind of background in our organization. So that helps coming from the for-profit world and coming from a consulting environment. You have very much a focus on results, and there's a certain professionalism around making sure that you get that. Secondly is we certainly have values, and part of those values are not just caring about the nonprofits we serve and caring about the impact, but it's also caring about our quality. Caring about respect for each other, and respect for each other means the fact that we need to carry our load and making sure that we're fulfilling our end of the bargain with our teammates. And so that culture really comes together so that we take pride in our work and we take pride in our professionalism. So many nonprofits, I think, fall into the trap of becoming family. And I went to a really great class at Georgia Center for Nonprofits, and it was about HR policies and whatnot. And the instructor said, you need to realize you're not a family. You certainly have aspects of that, but you get paid and you're expected to do a job. And it's a very important job, and you need to do that job very well. And if you don't, then you're going to lose the privilege of working here. And so you have to keep your mind on that. And I imagine as a family business, you have some of the same things, and the nonprofit has it as well. Sometimes people use family, this family culture, as an excuse, right? So we're family, so if I'm having a bad day and don't want to do my job, that's okay. No, it's not. Our mission's really important. Our outcomes are really important, and we need to be at the top of our game every single day.
Yeah, so speaking of talk of your game, I'm going to ask both of you, as you think about continuing to lead your organization and thinking about what skills and what things you need to build within yourself, you know, what's something that you've had to stretch and you've had to develop so that you could be a better leader and delivering that on that promise to your customers?
I think everything, right? So especially the transition from for-profit to nonprofit, it's very different. And I think I had the same bias that most people have outside the nonprofit sector. And I thought, how hard can it be? It's a nonprofit. So I'll step in there and I'll fix this and it'll be great and it'll be easy and then we'll move on to something else. And I was naive. It's extraordinarily hard, and we should all have a great amount of respect for the nonprofit sector and an appreciation for how hard their job is. Because if you think about it, I'll talk about our organization in particular. You know, our job is to provide technology to nonprofits that don't really think they need it, they don't understand it, and they don't think it's necessary for them to fulfill their mission. But as Anthony said, every organization needs to be a technology organization. So we need them to understand that. And then on the flip side, we have their donor community that often thinks it's easy and not worthy of investment. You know, the typical scenario is they need, pick something simple, I need a website. Oh, no problem. My nephew is at Georgia Tech, and he'll do this over the weekend, and it'll be great. Now, if he was an investor in a for-profit business and he was at a board meeting, he would probably not say that. But he would for a nonprofit, and it happens all the time. And it's because of that bias. It's a nonprofit. How hard can it be? But it's an organization, and they have complex issues, and it requires investment. So that's the gap we fill, and that's the growth I've had to take. It's just understanding how to bridge those two communities. How do I talk to the nonprofit community so that they understand the need? And how do I talk to the donor community to understand the need as well and its worthiness of being funded appropriately?
Yeah. So, Anthony, what are you having to sort of stretch on and develop yourself so that you can be an even more effective leader?
I think James had the right answer. It's everything. It's that the rate of change is so fast. There's so much information out there that one of the most difficult challenges of leaders is figuring out what you should do and what you can't do. And so I think that sort of understanding of where your own strengths are and where you should focus is going to be different for every individual. What has been the stretch for me is that, and it's part of making the switch from doing, you know, the legal counsel work to being president and being more dealing with our external piece, is that I'm more introverted by nature, and I actually enjoy you know, wrestling with the problems and dealing with internal administrative things. And that's where a lot of my time started with the organization. But it's had to switch where I'm now on the road a lot more, outside of the office more, having to delegate and allow others to do functions that I'd, you know, like to do myself. So the shift for me has been shifting my focus and understanding that some of the things that I might prefer to do or like doing are not moving the organization forward. And that's, you know, sometimes a hard realization, is because you want to sometimes by you have to be both patient and impatient, I think, in leadership in terms of seeing a larger picture and understanding that, you know, what you're doing right now is not necessarily what the organization needs in the big picture. So for me, it's been understanding and changing what my role is away from, you know, where I think I would naturally gravitate.
Yeah. And how do you get that? I think as someone who owns a business, you know, you learn a lot about yourself as you're trying to drive growth and, you know, juggle all of the things. Who's your sounding board? How do you ensure that you have people or multiple people that can put a mirror up so that as you're wrestling with those growth issues and you're trying to think about what the right thing to do is you have a space to go to get, you know, some feedback that's sometimes tough to take, but also very helpful.
Yeah, I think it's, I don't have a sort of a formal list. It's evolved over the years. And so there are a few individuals, a couple in the organization and a couple outside of the organization that it's helpful to have conversations with. You know, there are some challenges that as you grapple with them internally, when you have the conversation with someone removed, is where you either realize how clear or ridiculous it is, because they look at you, and when they by having the luxury of distance, they can see that, you know, what you're talking about doesn't make sense. So I think it's important to have both internal and external to sort of, you know, to have a check. It can be challenging when you're in a leadership position because you you're always in a leadership position. So I think that's something that you have to recognize, is that you have, you know, you have peers and you have your colleagues that you work closely with. But at the end of the day, you're still always speaking to them as president, whatever the context is. So it's important to have, you know, to have that balance of folks outside the organization to go to where you don't have that dynamic.
And James, it sounds like you have mentors and you have advisors that you use. Do you have a formal process or is it mostly informal?
I would say it's informal. We have developed an organization and what's the right? I'll say it's vocal. We have a vocal organization and a lot of transparency. So I get feedback and mentorship from everyone in the organization on a daily basis, and I wouldn't have it any other way. We have very seasoned, very smart, very capable people in our organization, and I want them to feel comfortable telling me what they think, and they do. And sometimes it's good to hear, and sometimes it's not, but it's always welcomed. And then there's certainly people that have been impactful in my life, and those relationships, we've talked a lot about relationships a lot, especially at the beginning of the show. Those relationships are really important to me, and I mine them for knowledge all the time. And there's probably tons of them, but all of them are informal. I don't think I've had any form. The only formal mentorship that I've ever had is probably that executive coach. Which was obviously impactful to me.
Yeah. So as we, you know, begin to wind down the show, talk to me about, you know, 5 years from now, TechBridge. What are you hoping to accomplish as a leader? Give us, you know, something that if all the cards fall right, that you would see the organization being 5, you know, even 10 years from now.
So let's talk about 2017.
Okay.
So at last fiscal year's Digital Ball, which was last May, we set a record for raising money at the Digital Ball by raising $1.2 million, which isn't bad for a night's work. And at the Digital Ball, I put a goal out there, and I said by 2017, we want to double in size. We want to double our impact. We've served 500 nonprofits since inception 13 years ago, and we want to serve 1,000 nonprofits over the next 4 years. We do about $3 million in revenue right now. We want to double that. That's not all that important, but that does kind of lend itself to scale. But more importantly, You know, we generate a certain dollar amount of value, you know, like $7 million a year of value in technology services, and we want to double that. We want to make that much larger, and I think we can do that. I know we can do that. And part of it is by going national so that there's more nonprofits to serve. There's only a certain number of nonprofits that need the help, want the help here in the local market. Through our partnership with TechSoup, which is TechSoup.org. If you're a nonprofit and you don't know about it, you should definitely check it out. It's basically the Amazon buying site for the nonprofit world. So you can go there. If you need a computer, you can go there and you can get it. If you need some software, you can go there and get it. So we're putting our services up on their exchange. TechSoup's in 90 countries and have served over 90,000 nonprofits in the last year. So I imagine in 5 years from now, you'll see TechBridge services delivered to nonprofits potentially around the globe.
Yeah. So, and that I'm hearing just a number of things that, you know, when I work with my clients that are integral to their growth, you know, setting a specific goal and making it aspirational so people have something to look at. You talked a lot about your culture, but also partnerships. Before I come to you, Anthony, I would be remiss if I did not ask the question for other nonprofits. So that digital ball and that number that you just gave us in terms of how much you were able to raise is an amazing kind of number. What's the one thing you would tell to another nonprofit about, you know, that signature event and how they might use it to generate money? Because a lot of times people, you know, they're working, it breaks even, or yeah, it does well, but it doesn't have the kind of numbers that you're talking about. So give us just one nugget that they might think of.
The secret sauce behind
the
digital ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. We'll we may have to keep that secret, but maybe I'll give I would be happy to share what the secret is, because it's not a secret. We've built a wonderful community. The people that attend the digital ball are supporters of ours, so it's not focused on the nonprofit community as attendees. It's focused on being a fundraising event, which means you know, corporate America attends it, and the reason they do is. It is a great community that we've built that cares about the other members of the community. The technology community has embraced us. They've embraced us as a way to make an impact using their skills and their products and their services. And they trust us that if they give us these resources, whatever they may be, whether it's their people or their products or their money, that we're going to turn it into something that's more impactful than they could do on their own. And the reason we're able to do that is because of the size and scale of the community we brought together. And then on top of that, I think they enjoy being together. They enjoy the celebration and the celebration of the accomplishments over the last year. And they enjoy being there networking. And since it is a tight-knit community, I think they tend to take care of them. They tend to help each other, which is good for business.
Yeah.
So it's that synergy between the realities of the business world and giving them that sense of accomplishment that they want, you know, that synthesis of their community goals and their professional goals. We're able to satisfy that through this event.
Great. And so, Anthony, if I think about Concessions International, again, 5-10 years, what's on the radar and what are some aspirational things that we can be looking forward to?
From the top line view, our goal is to more than double in size over the next 5 years. We've put a lot more emphasis on growth as the structure of our contracts has changed, sort of the structure of opportunities. So we're aiming to get deeper in some of the major markets, Dallas and Denver in particular. We're also looking at Chicago. We were recently awarded our first location in D.C. So we've shifted over the last couple of years to focus on the larger markets, and that's really related to what's happening with the airline industry and hubs. And so we're putting a lot more emphasis there. I expect from an internal side, for us to achieve that, what's exciting is the organization has to become less hierarchical, more empowerment of the managers, better leverage in partnerships. You know, this goes to that. How do you, you had asked earlier about, you know, how do you continue to thrive with all these sort of macro challenges? And the answer is you have to become a different kind of organization. And so the kind of organization that perhaps we've been in the past that has been a little bit more corporate structured, what we're finding is that in order for us to move quicker and meet the challenges, you have to dismantle that structure a little bit. And that can be uncomfortable, right? Uncomfortable for people in the organization who are used to certain structures and departments and teams, where nowadays it's more project groups and work groups, and you've got to have different people working on different projects simultaneously in order to meet the challenges and move forward. So it's I think we're poised for a great deal of growth, and we've got some great managers, you know, and directors who are driving that forward in the organization. But to meet these opportunities, it means we've got to also be a different company, which means more opportunities, in fact, for the talent that we're attracting and retaining. But I think that's whether you're large or small, I think that's the way business is going. You know, the structures we've had in the past are going away because they just, you know, they can't sustain themselves.
Yeah. So I always end with this question of my guests, and it's a reflective question, which is, go back and sort of think about your 20-year-old self, you know, coming out of college, starting your career, trying to decide what you're going to do. And if you could tell your 20-year-old self something today based on the knowledge you have today, what would you say, Anthony? What would you tell your 20-year-old self?
I think that, there's a couple things. One, I think you just, wherever you are, you've got to really apply yourself fully. You know, and sometimes I talk to people who aren't particularly enthused about what they're doing at the moment, and understanding that you've got to work. Those opportunities don't just come. You've got to work. Maybe someone will recognize it, see something in you. You know, you really have to apply yourself fully wherever you are and maximize that. The other piece is better just awareness and networking. I think there's understanding the value of relationships and what that means in to your career and business is something that I know for me, and I know for many, you acquire that appreciation as time goes on, and you start understanding it's not just about how smart you may be or how hard you work, but it's also a lot about how you're connecting with people and how you're being a good listener and being aware of what's going on around you. And so I think that would be my advice for me or someone in their 20s.
James?
I'm smiling because all I can think of is I would have bought everything, put everything I had into Apple stock. Everything I'm thinking about is stock picks. But when I was 20, I mean, that was the 90s. And the 90s were an amazing time for technology and for corporate America. And I think I would remind myself that don't get caught up in the irrational exuberance of the times. You know, there's a lot of bubbles out there. And I at that time, I got caught up in it. I don't know if I'd change anything because it was a lot of fun to get caught up in it. And a lot of wealth was created and taken away, and probably a couple times, and it was fun. But I think I would have imparted some wisdom about the cyclical nature of life and of things, and making sure that I took the long view rather than getting caught up in the lemmings.
Yeah. So, James, if our listeners want to learn more about TechBridge and the amazing things that you're doing, how do they do that?
Go to our website. So, techbridge.org, we have a new website we're very proud of. Our Ketty Group, actually, was very gracious and built the design of our site and did new logo and all the branding for it, and did that out of the generosity of their hearts. So, definitely want to thank them for that. But that would be the easiest way. When you go to our site, you'll see two big pictures, and one is written, if you need help, click there, and the other says, if you want to help, click there. So whether you're a sponsor or whether you're a nonprofit, our website can give you everything you need on how to either get help or become part of our mission.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't ask you is, are there volunteer opportunities at TechBridge? How do you engage from that perspective? Listeners might want to know.
We do. The best way to get involved from a volunteer standpoint is through our adoption program. And our adoption program is fantastic. We actually doubled our expectations in the last year on this program. But it's a corporate program that basically says a company like a Turner or Broadcasting or a Coca-Cola or whoever are going to adopt a nonprofit, whether it's a particular project or whether it's just their support needs in general. but they're going to fund the gap between the nonprofit's ability to pay and what the true cost of that technology is. And then they're going to put volunteers into the effort as well. And the volunteer effort is less about, it's important about the skill set and getting the project done or fulfilling whatever the need is, but it's more about building that attachment between the two organizations. And we have wonderful stories like Turner that adopted Literacy Action, and the team came out and they did some remodeling, and they actually came out and painted Literacy Action. And that's exactly the type of community that we're building and the type of engagement that we'd love to hear about. So if you're interested in volunteering, go to your corporation, go to your boss and say, we need to adopt a nonprofit because that's how we're going to help change the world.
Great. Well, thanks so much, James. It's been very enlightening. So, Anthony, how do we hear more about, how do we find out more about Concessions International?
Well, similarly, our website is the best place for news announcements, locations, employment opportunities, and that's CINTL.com.
Great. Well, thank you both. Got any major plans for the weekend, either of you?
Yes. Our church, St. Elias, is having their Middle East Festival, and my priest is going to be so happy that I actually announced that our festival is happening this weekend, so please come by.
Glad I could give you that opportunity. Anthony, anything going on?
Both my kids have soccer games, and I'm a soccer fanatic, so those are my Saturdays. And then my wife and I are training for half marathon, so I have Sunday to not look forward to a long run.
Okay. Wow. Well, either way, have a good weekend, and join us next week on Growth Matters, because all things growth are discussed here, and it's all about let's talking about it, because
growth matters.
Thanks.